Translation. By the mercy of Sanatan Goswami, I have learnt the final conclusions of devotional service. And by the grace of Sri Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. So we'll do that together as well. So by the mercy of Sanatan Goswami, I have learned the final conclusion of devotional service. And by the grace of Sri Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. So the purport, of course, by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Sanatana Goswami Prabhu, the teacher of the science of devotional service, wrote several books, of which the Bhagavatamrita is very famous. Anyone who wants to know about the subject matter of devotees, devotional service, and Krishna must read this book. Sanatana Goswami also wrote a special commentary on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as the Dasamapitipani, which is so excellent that by reading it, one can understand very deeply the pastimes of Krishna. In his exchanges of loving activities, another famous book by Sanatana Goswami is the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which states the rules and regulations of all divisions of Vaishnavas, namely Vaishnava householders, Vaishnava brahmacharis, Vaishnava vanapras, and Vaishnava sannyasis. This book was especially written, however, for the Vaishnava householders. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami has described Sanatana Goswami in his prayer, Vilipala Kusha Manjali, verse 6, where he has expressed his obligation to Sanatana Goswami in the following words. Vairagara rupakti rasam ratyane apayayam mam maham bishtum madham kipam buddhiya paradukaduki sanatantam bhavum asrayami. Translation. I was unwilling to drink the nectar of devotional service possessed of renunciation, but Sanatana Goswami, out of his causeless mercy, made me drink it, even though I was otherwise unable to do so. Therefore, he is an ocean of mercy. He is very compassionate to all fallen souls like me, and thus it is my duty to offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also, in the last section of the Chaitanya-caritamrita, specifically mentions the name of Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Srila Jiva Goswami in his respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of all these three spiritual masters, as well as Raghunath Das. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami also accepted Sanatana Goswami as the teacher of the science of devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami is described in the Bhakti Rasacharya, or one who is known, so he's described as a Bhakti Rasacharya, or who is one as known as knows the essence of devotional service. In his famous book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is the science of devotional service, and by reading this book, one can understand the meaning of devotional service. Other of his famous books is the Ujjvala Limanani. In this book, he elaborately explains the loving affairs and transcendental activities of Lord Krishna and Radharani. Quite a lot of words there. I'll do the verse again. By the mercy of Sanatana Goswami, I have learned the final conclusions of devotional service. And by the grace of Srila Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. Omakyanam tididam dasya jalangala shalakaya taksho amritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri titanya manobhistam sapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa garavayam sadatis papatantikam he krishna karuna sindhu dinabandhu jagapate gopisha gopikanta radhakanta namustate. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishnamastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Chinamine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gudavani Pracharine Nivase Shishunyavadi Prashachade Satarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sedvaita Garadha Sivasati Guru Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. By the mercy of Sanatana Goswami, I have learnt the final conclusions of devotional service, and by the grace of Srila Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. So I think this verse and this purport certainly concentrates really on the works of the Goswamis, particularly Rupa Goswami. And indeed, we find that unlike a lot of other traditions, even within the Hindu world, we find the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are quite well known, actually, in the scholarly circles for not necessarily having one book and one book only that we have access to. We have several. Yes, we have certain books that we prioritize or we focus more on, in particular Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. But actually, when we turn to the previous acharyas in our lineage since Lord Chaitanya, particularly at the Goswamis, we actually find there's actually a whole host of literature. However, one of the points is that as a preaching movement, we tend to concentrate on Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita and so forth, because some of the writings of the Goswamis are too high, ultimately, where they're concentrating or focusing on Krishna Leela, Radha Krishna's pastimes and so forth. And if that general public have direct access to that, without understanding perhaps some of the more fundamental philosophy, then it could be misunderstood as stories and allegories and metaphors and things like that. But the whole idea is that there's a process of thought going on here, with the Bhagavad Gita perhaps being the summary of the knowledge that you need to know. But of course, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then of course the books of the Goswamis, Nectar of Devotion, etc., are going into a bit more detail. Some of the other books, of course, apart from the Bhagavatam, you've got Brahma Samhita, of course. Again, that was translated by, was it Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur? That's discovered by Lord Chaitanya during his pilgrimage in South India, and was recited at the dawn of creation in praises of the Lord, and full of Vaishnava conclusions and describing Govinda, the primeval Lord. And of course, the hymn itself is primeval, said to be one of the, even historically, even from a mundane scholarship point of view, perhaps one of the oldest prayers there is in historical records, which is interesting. And Lord Chaitanya just found it. It's incredible, isn't it? Other books like Gita Govinda, Jayadev's work, a respected poem presenting the amorous pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the springtime. Krishna Kalamrita, Nectar for Krishna's Ears. And then you got Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The reader is introduced with various philosophical conclusions, and Chaitanya Bhagavat, of course. So they've got the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which tends to concentrate more on the latter pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. But the first biographical work on Lord Chaitanya was by Vrindavan Das Thakur, who describes the early life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there are others as well, but those are some of the most the Nectar of Devotion as well, of course, which I'll talk about in a moment. So of course the whole Gaudiya tradition agenda, in fact the whole lineage of Lord Chaitanya, is the philosophical conclusions are actually very important. We have to understand also that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself took sannyas initiation but from a Mayavad sannyasi, but that was only because of the times and in order to add credibility to his preaching. But actually, of course, he was anything but a Mayavadi, because our conclusion, of course, is Achinchabeda Veda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is how, in other words, we believe that the absolute truth is not merging into an impersonal Brahman. It is not merging into a void or any type of nothingness. However, our ultimate goal is to enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis and cowherd boys, etc., and the Vrindavan pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. So therefore, we understand that the absolute truth is full of variety, pastimes, relationships. And this actually, although we're not the only personalists, so to speak, in theological traditions, we are, the Gaudiya tradition, we're actually quite known for focusing on that, and understanding the Krishna Leela from a special insider's point of view, the personalism, and understanding that if the form and variety and relationships they exist in this world, even though they're faulty, they do exist in this world to some degree or another. Therefore, where does it all come from? Can all of what we experience come from nothingness or a void or an impersonal Brahma Jyoti? No, we understand that what this world is a perverted reflection of reality. So that, in other words, mundane romance and so forth between male and female is actually a perverted reflection of the other side of the same coin of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And i.e. it's there, it's here in the material world, but it's not in its purest form. Which I think is quite interesting. But as I mentioned, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the ocean of nectar of devotion, as it would be in English, explains the spiritual aspects of devotional service, forms of Krishna, guidelines of behavior, offenses to the holy name, proper modes of and methods of worship, rules and regulations and deity worship, how to celebrate holidays and festivals, how to conduct spiritual ceremonies. But most significantly, the book helps one conduct loving service to the Lord. And of course, Prabhupada summarized this, is actually, of course, in The Nectar of Devotion, as previously mentioned. So that's another book out of many books we have access to. And Prabhupada actually gave us what we needed to have, because more intimate pastime, and this is very important actually, more, detailed intimate pastimes between Radha, Krishna and the gopis in particular, is something which is not necessarily recommended for the general public or for the neophyte stage. How this type of thing will come naturally, the understanding of the transcendental nature and the true nature of these Krishna's pastimes will come naturally. Although it must be said that if we look at the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, its Krishna's pastimes are in the latter part of the Bhagavatam, and yet the first 9 cantos we're looking at we're looking at great previous kings and their spiritual journeys. We're looking at Krishna. The fighting of demons. You know, we're looking at all kinds of different appearances of various avatars and the prayers and so forth. But actually, all this is in preparation for Krishna Lila by the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. It's not that the Krishna Lila is the first canto. The reason being is that you're purifying your mind, you're purifying your heart and so forth to understand and to get into Krishna's pastimes by the time you get to the 10th canto. It's actually described that when you look at Krishna's feet, it's like the first canto. And then when you work your way up, you know, first, second, third, fourth canto. And when you get to his face, then you've got the 10th canto. But that's the most beautiful nectarian part. But you can't go straight to his face. Apparently, when you take darshan of the deities, you look at Krishna's feet first, then you go up to his face like that. So similarly, that is how we study the Srimad Bhagavatam. If someone go, of course, someone might say, well, what about the Krishna book? This being the summary, of course, of the 10th canto. Why is that a separate book? And it's because Prabhupada knew he didn't have long time to go in his mortal body. And he knew this was it really needed to go out. And also, but actually, the idea of people seeing Krishna as a mundane fictional character or pastimes which are metaphoric or symbolic in some way is offensive to us. Therefore, what we do when we study, we understand we're not the body, first of all, and then we follow a process of devotional service so that when we are exposing ourselves to Krishna Lila, we are actually seeing it in a non-offensive way, or we're getting the type of realizations which are conducive and helpful to our spiritual life, as opposed to being distracting or in any way mundane or misunderstood. But in The Nectar of Devotion, as in the work of Srila Prabhupada, of course, in particular, he concentrates on different rasas, different relationships that one can have with Krishna on the advanced level. In the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, it actually describes different, you know, one can be a conjugal lover of Krishna, one can be a parent, one can have the rasa of a friendship or neutrality. A lot of us are very familiar with these different relationships with Krishna. But Prabhupada also mentions in the introduction, it's only really advanced devotees that can begin to realize or to form these kind of levels. However, the information is there because we have to begin with the end in mind. So we can understand. But the whole essence that is pulling all this together or stringing these literatures together, whether it's the Nectar of Devotion, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, etc., and the works of the Goswamis, it's all about personal relationship. because the foundation of devotional service really is relationship. Oh, I'm just going to really work hard now to work in the kitchen or distribute books because I'm really in love with impersonal Brahman. You know, it really keeps me going. It's just not quite the same as when you're dealing with a person, because love relationships involves people. So anyway, in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada is writing here that the rasa of subordinate ecstatic love with Krishna. The devotees who always think of Krishna as superior are in a subordinate ecstatic love. To such a devotee, the concept of inferiority to the Lord is very prominent, and he rarely takes interest in any other kind of transcendental loving humour with the Lord. So it's understood this is not the highest rasa of Krishna. And it's also interesting because in Vaikuntha, as in the Vaikuntha planets, that part of the spiritual world which is outside of Goloka and Vrindavan, Krishna or Vishnu, Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan, is understood from a point of view of awe and reverence, where Lord Vishnu Narayan is presented on a throne, forearm, Vishnu form with a crown, and there's a sense of kingliness, there's a sense of, but at the same time, that's all very good, of course, but there is a sense, there's a distance there, isn't there, when compared with the much more intimate pastimes of Krishna. For example, in contrast to be Krishna's friend, described here, there are different kinds of laughing and joking conversations when you're Krishna's friend. An example of such friendly relationships with Krishna is, for example, described in the Krishna book, whereas Krishna would play games, imitate peacocks, with the cowherd boys, and even joke and all kinds of little things where Krishna one day had his mouth, eyes closed, his mouth open, and he thought the cowherd boys were going to give him a sweet. But because he had his eyes closed, they did a trick on him. So they put a flower in his mouth instead. You know, but actually these kind of tricks are done by schoolboys even in this world, actually, or even brahmacharis, I imagine. In the ashram, God knows what you get up to in the ashram in these days. But no, seriously though, it's like these things actually happen in this world, but it happens in the purest original form in Krishna Leela. But to know Krishna as a friend, can you imagine that, how that would be, laughing and joking and running through the fields looking after the cows of Krishna? Then of course there's the rasa of parenthood, where, like, for example, Mother Yashoda heard that Krishna's cows were being forcibly moved by the servants of Kamsa, and that the tender cowherd boys were trying to protect the cows. So Yashoda, you think, how can I protect these poor boys from the invasion of Kamsa's army? Of course, this is an example of a sense of superiority over Krishna, which is also a bona fide rasa. Because a parent always cares for the child. Oh, I hope my child's not in trouble. Hope he's not getting into a fight. He's getting late. He hasn't come home for his meal. Already, I'm very, very worried. This again is, there's a relationship there, and a very deep one, between mother and child, as personified here by Mother Yashoda. Of course, it's always understood, as the Goswamis would agree, that the highest rasa is actually conjugal love. That, of course, the relationship between the gopis and Krishna in Vraj, that's understood actually to be the centre of Goloka Vrindavan. Because even within Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world, there are different levels and different sectors and different groups, different people serving Krishna in their own way. So the relationship of conjugal love, the Lord and the young gopis exhibit this in different ways. Even then, there's variety. You see, there's a theme of variety going on all the time here. For example, glancing at each other, moving of the eyebrows, speaking sweet words and exchanging smiles. There's laughter, astonishment, chivalry, lamentation, anger and dread. Because, unfortunately, Krishna gets henpecked by Radharani as well, just like a henpecked husband. There's no freedom from that, even in the spiritual world, it would appear. But of course, in its very much its purest form. So we can understand that as Vaishnavas, we're understanding that these pastimes are by no means mundane, and the relationship between the love that the gopis have for Krishna and vice versa, of course, what to speak of the relationship between Radha and Krishna, is not tinged with sex desire or even mundane romance. It is Shishirada Gokla Nanda Ki Jai. Shishirada Sita Ramasun Hanuman Ki Jai. Shishirada Gokla Ki Jai. It is not to be confused with mundane relationships or tinged with sexual desire. But that leads us to what the purport and the verse was saying. Srila Rupa Goswami compiled the Ujjvala Limani from which one can understand to the fullest limits the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. But as I said before, to give you an example, I was going through folio and Prabhupada is having this conversation with a professor, and it kind of summarizes symbolizes in some way what Prabhupada actually thought of this particular scripture. And the conversation went like this. There's a professor going, "So, Prabhupada, have you translated also the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu?" Prabhupada says, "Oh, yes." "Oh, all of it?" "Or yes, all of it. It is called Nectar of Devotion." Professor says, "Oh, what about the Ujjvala Nilamani?" "Hmm? The Ujjvala Nilamani?" And Prabhupada pauses. He gets a bit, and he says, "Ujjvala Nilamani. No, Ujjvala Nilamani is not for general study." "No, but it is for high advanced devotee." "Have you read the Bhagavad Gita?" So in other words, Prabhupada is here, is this professor who is not practicing anything, he's probably not even vegetarian or whatever. Prabhupada is actually quite keen to divert the conversation and understand that even mundane scholarship, or especially actually in some ways mundane scholarship, it should not ideally be exposed to this type of literatures. And what we're going to be doing, I'm going to be reading some of that type of material in just a moment, as we have some time left. But I'll move on quickly because I understand there's a wedding on, isn't there? So let's move on quickly. Anyway, the Ujjvala Nilamani, it deals exclusively with the subject of conjugal relationship with Krishna. Just like there are many sentimental poems describing the love between men and women in this world, however, the reading of this book will definitely astonish us as to what an exact and detailed study of the transcendental love of God. So what I wanted to finish off was to share with you something I've been reading recently, and that's some of the books actually by Shiva Ramaswamy. A lot of you may be familiar with the Venu Gita or the Naprayaham. And these are books Shiva Ramaswamy has composed based on the works of the previous acharyas, going from the Goswamis up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, actually. And a lot of it is, well, this particular book, Naprayaham, which means "How can I ever repay you for your love," is the second volume of this series by Shiva Ramaswamy. And basically it is about the gopis' feelings for Krishna. And I just wanted to... Now we've kind of explained it's all not mundane, that we're now ready to hear some Gopi Krishna Leela, I thought. So I'll read this through and then we'll complete. So here we go. This is a Gopi sharing her feelings of her love for Krishna. "It seems like millennia since my eyes last saw your beautiful form, since my senses last feasted upon your transcendental qualities. The hands of time may dictate what they like, but who can argue with an impulsive heart? O Krishna, love of my life, I long for you with every atom of my being. Will we meet again? Surely we must. Why else would I continue to dress and ornament a body dictated to your service for so long? I exist for no one but you. O Krishna, save me." My bath completed, I sit by the window. The sun's morning rays streaming through the lattice work create ornate designs upon my golden limbs. Should I wear a dark blue sari? If I do, I'll be wrapped up with thoughts of you. My assistant places a mirror in my hand and she begins to comb my hair. When I see my reflection, I think, oh, how beautiful. If this beauty brings such a view but a drop of pleasure, the Creator has triumphed. Otherwise, what is the use of this beauty? Of what use are the bejeweled walls and ivory furniture of my dressing chamber? After all, it is for your satisfaction alone that I endure the daily tedium of dressing. Chatting as she usually does, my friend Magna reminds me of the many nectarian pastimes we shared. Shamalata, she says, do you remember the night Govinda combed and decorated your hair by the bank of the Jamuna? It was a full moon night of the autumn season, when the night-blooming jasmine perfumed the air, and moonshine painted every tree, creeper, and flower silver. Oh, how aggressive was the sound of your little flute that evening. Many of my friends were drawn from their homes under the most embarrassing circumstances. They told me, some were cooking, some were caring for their children, some were alone with their husbands, and then suddenly the flute plays and they were gone. But after dragging us through the jungle in the dead of the night, how could you simply say, oh, welcome, as if we were unexpected hosts? You're such a connoisseur of the art of humiliating others. Yes, it's true. For what other reason would you ask, O most fortunate ladies, welcome, what I may do to please you? So munificent of you, oh, so gallant, Krishna, to please us. We followed the call of your flute to please you. Day after day you enjoyed with us, and then you turned the tables and asked why we had come. Oh, how clever, Krishna. Not only that, you broadcast the dangers of the forest, saying, although there is an abundance of moonlight, this forest is full of snakes lying beneath the carpet of the foliage of the forest. Vrindavan, a dangerous place? Oh, really? You should have done better than that, Krishna, as an excuse. Who knows better than you about the serene atmosphere of Vrindavan forest? Here, even tigers behave like domestic animals. Then, seeing the gopis cast sidelong glances of bewilderment, you continued, if you have come to collect night-blooming flowers for your worship, it is neither the time nor place, and why not? Forest gardens? And I missed that one a bit. Oh, Govinda, if your plan was to tease us, you certainly succeeded. But let me say one thing: your lessons on chastity were like a pauper's advice on commerce. Every leaf and flower of Vrindavan chuckled when you said, the highest religious duty for woman is to serve her husband. Oh, that was really coming from you, Krishna. How I could barely believe my ears when you said, please return to your homes. How could you be so callous? Krishna, do you simply think we blew in with the wind? Can we be so easily dismissed? What do you know of a gopi's distress? Are you unaware of your influence over the women of Braj? He who wields a sword but must be held accountable for your injuries he inflicts. The pain you caused with your double-edged tongue will certainly be remembered in the court of King Cupid. O beloved, did your heart not break when the gopis hung their heads in sadness? Did your eyes not burn when their sorrowful breathing dried their reddened lips? When they scratched the ground aimlessly with their toes, did you think they were decorating Vrindavan as a pastime? When tears, carrying the black mascara from our eyes, washed the vermilion powder from our breasts, did your eyes not moisten? Oh, Hari, how would you have tolerated our standing like statues, silently bearing the burden of misery? Within our minds we thought, if our love cannot conquer Krishna, then what is the use of our lives? But you went on, will we really be satisfied without any form of maintenance here in the forest? We said, when you don your golden turban decorated with strands of jewels and tiny garlands, we will write it bit by bit until it's perfectly placed on your lotus head. If you try to stop us by shaking a finger, we will simply ignore you. Placing a hand beneath your turban, we will arrange your curly locks, which had conspired to cover the half moon of your effulgent forehead. O Krishna, such encounters of your boundless sweetness will certainly be sufficient for our sustenance in the forest. But still, you did not relent. Friends, your husbands will not tolerate this behavior of yours. They will complain bitterly and produce a fearful situation for us. But Krishna, it is your two mighty arms that make us fearless. Just as they lifted Govardhan Hill to protect us from the reins of King Indra, those arms will surely destroy all our enemies. Now, with those strong arms of yours, kindly embrace us in the dead of the night. I think I'll stop there.